Let's look then at this World AIDS Day 2011. The theme is looking ahead to a zero generation, isn't it? Zero new infections. Isn't this a bit of a, well, utopian dream?
Well, in a way it is a utopian dream, but unless we articulate the dream, then it's harder to build some benchmarks to get there. And so the whole thrust of the long-range plan now of UNAIDS is zero new infections, zero children born with HIV, zero deaths due to HIV, and zero stigma. And so I think that's very much what has helped to shape this theme of World AIDS Day. And actually, the dream is more realizable now than it was 25 or even 10 years ago, because we have made good progress with getting access to medicines for many people, although we still have more than 10 million people who need that access. And also, we have the means to stop new infections among children. We simply have to make sure that more pregnant women who are living with HIV get access to the medicines that they need to be able to prevent the transmission from mother to child. So it's more a possibility now, and we need to articulate it and then work toward accomplishing it.
Here at Caritas, you're working particularly with this mother-to-child transmission, aren't you? The project that you launched a couple of years ago. How successful has that been? Where are you seeing most results in this work?
Well, the Caritas Heart for Children campaign was launched in 2009, and we've had very good participation from Caritas and other Catholic organizations that are interested in this campaign for early treatment and diagnosis of children living with HIV, and then for better uptake and access to the prevention of mother-to-child transmission of HIV. And we've had a number of Caritases take advocacy action with pharmaceutical companies to encourage that they continue the research and development of pediatric dosages for HIV medicines so that children living with HIV can live and look forward to a long life. And then also trying to work with governments and pharmaceutical companies to try to undo the obstacles for pregnant women to learn of their infection earlier and then to both receive the simple medicines to prevent the actual transmission during the birth process, but then also to get onto medicines so that they won't transmit the virus when they're breastfeeding their children, and also that they'll be living to take care of their children, that they won't die due to AIDS-related illnesses when their children are quite young.
Stigma is still a key to this, isn't it? Because in so many places, women still are not able or unwilling to come forward to be tested. They're afraid of being thrown out of their homes. How do you really make significant progress in this area today?
Well, one way is certainly to be sure that governments not only have laws against stigma and discrimination toward people living with HIV, but they implement those laws. The next way is to try to influence people to change their own attitudes and behaviors toward people who are living with HIV. And I think that the church has a key role to play in that. And so in a lot of the workshops that I facilitate with clergy and religious, especially with the clergy, we actually practice how to give homilies about HIV, how to make sure that we animate within the Christian community a community of love and acceptance rather than of placing blame or rejection on people. And then also the more people who know that there's a chance to be able to have access to treatment and therefore to live even though they're living with HIV, then they're more willing to come out and to be tested and to learn early of their infection and then to be able to be integrated within the wider community and talk about their situation. So all those are ways to try to eliminate stigma.
You focus very much, this is the heart of the work that you do, and yet at international level, perhaps the whole question of HIV/AIDS has really fallen off the news agenda, hasn't it? It's not seen as an urgent priority anymore, particularly at a time like this of economic recession.
There's a great fear that that more and more governments will not pay so much attention to HIV and will cut back the funding. And we've seen some of that already. Last year, Caritas Internationalis joined some other Catholic organizations to do a study of the impact on AIDS funding cutbacks and flatlining on our own church programs in developing countries. And in fact, then we took the opportunity to have a side event at the latest high-level meeting meeting on AIDS that took place at UN headquarters in New York in June of 2011 to reveal the feedback that we received and to actually have people giving witness to the way those cutbacks have affected their programs. And that then we used as a platform to influence governments to stay fully committed on their commitment to give funding for AIDS programs. You know, I've had many church programs turn to me now and say, you convinced us that we had to start antiretroviral treatment programs. You told us to get started because the funding was available and it was a way of saving lives. But now these governments are pulling back their funding, and yet we have the obligation to keep these people on medicine for life. And so it puts us in a real dilemma, and we need to keep up the international advocacy and pressure for governments to respect their commitments.
Part of the problem also for Caritas was that governments simply weren't willing to recognize just how much the church was doing in so many countries around the world. Do you think that we're winning that battle at all yet?
I think that we're making progress with the battle. I'm not sure we're winning it yet, but we have made progress. More and more, there's a recognition of the role that faith-based organizations play. Certainly, we've had the director of UNAIDS, Michel Sidibe, publicly acknowledge that, both at meetings at the Vatican, but also then to his own board at UNAIDS to say how much the churches are doing. Recently, I was appointed as a member of a steering group for the new global plan to eliminate new infections among children by 2015 and to keep their mothers alive and healthy. And I was specifically appointed as a member of that steering group, which is a very small group of people, as a representative of civil society and faith-based organizations. So I think it is a way of acknowledging how much churches and other religious groups are doing.
You say churches. You work very much across an ecumenical alliance also, don't you?
Yes, I am very active, and several of the Catholic organizations are very active in the Ecumenical Advocacy Alliance, which is based in Geneva, Switzerland, and which helps faith-based organizations learn how to do advocacy on these key issues related to HIV and AIDS. Of course, we work together with them as Catholic organizations on areas where we have agreement, and yet there are certain areas that we don't agree, and so then we certainly follow the teaching of the church in that regard.
Each time I ask you this question, but over the past year or so, what kind of stories, what kind of people have you met perhaps who give you most hope that there really is the possibility of an AIDS-free world?
Well, I meet the people who are living with HIV, but are living and living positively and living a life to the full. In this last trip to Vietnam, I met a man who was a drug user, was imprisoned in a drug rehabilitation center in Vietnam, was dying, literally dying, and he recovered because of the love that the Catholic Church gave him in that center. The sisters didn't want to see him go back into the regular prison, and so they trained him to be a nurse's aide in the hospice they were running in that prison. And eventually he finished his term, and now he's a nurse's aide in one of the clinics being run by the Archdiocese of Ho Chi Minh City. And the moment I walked in, he looked at me and he said, "You came to visit me." And that was 5 years ago. But he remembered that I had gone to that prison, and that meant something to him. But then, you know, I reminded him of the great good that he's doing now. In the program for children that's being run in the Archdiocese of Ho Chi Minh City, I met a nurse, fully qualified nurse, who literally was on her deathbed, but she got access to medicines because of that church program, and then the church worked very, very hard and at many odds to get her accepted into nursing school and to be licensed as a nurse, and she's now the nurse in this home for mothers and babies with AIDS. That makes me really get the hope that they can have a new life, and not only that they're now enjoying life for themselves, but they're dedicating their lives now to helping other people.
And also helping to bring the church's values into the heart of society, because particularly if you're talking about Vietnam, so often the church has a very difficult time trying to make its rights respected.
The church does have a very difficult time, and yet, again, when you talk to the people who are living with HIV, they want to go to those church programs because they know that there's a love that drives those programs that they cannot find in many of the public hospitals or even some of the private hospitals that are not church-related. And I think that very much connects with the message that our Holy Father, Pope Benedict XVI, has been giving to us about charity, that charity is not just something that's a philosophical principle, and it's not just being good professionals, although certainly the Church's charitable workers need to be good professionals as well, but it's driven by a love of Jesus and a personal relationship with Jesus that then is translated into the love that we feel from God into our own love for other people.